Welcome back, everyone, to the Midnight Hour. It's me, Leafy Grizzly, my best bud, Bob, over there. This is where we break down the latest TV, sports, music, movies, entertainment. And today we're talking about episode 3 of Severance, season 2. If you've been following along, you've been watching Severance since it came out. We're pretty excited about this latest season. And we kind of want to break down what happened on this last episode. So we'll be diving into it. If you haven't watched it yet, be warned, there will be spoilers and wild-ass predictions. That's just what we do. But before we get into the episode, let's do a quick recap of where we left off in episode 2. So, Bob, tell me about episode 2. What do you recall? What were our predictions last episode?
Helly being an infiltrant to the whole Lumen Industries, trying to figure out what's going on with Mark S. and the gang, what they know, what they don't know. That ice sounds delicious.
So, last episode left us with some big reveals and some even bigger questions. You know, Helly's outie seems to be making moves on the outside. Irving's dreams, you know, we'll talk about that a little bit more in episode 3, but his dreams and memories are becoming more vivid. Mark struggling to keep his work and personal life separate. We saw that, like, awkward encounter between he and Helly, and we know what Mark on the outside's dealing with, even amongst his own family. But even beyond the, you know, those personal situations and staging or whatever, we have Lumen. Lumen, the character, is being more revealed, I would say, in this season. While season 1 focused more on the mystery and the oddity of the entire situation, like, season 2 is appearing to be, like, Lumen demasked, right? And that's kind of, like, the way I'm seeing it. And, of course, we had that cryptic message between Milchick and Mrs. Kobo. But let's not forget about Dylan's increasing paranoia about what's going on with his son or his kids and his family. Season 3 answered a lot of that. I know with regard to my predictions, Miss Kobo getting a promotion and working on the inside, Helly's outie being her innie, Mark's work in the office is actually erasing the last remnants of Gemma's memories and attachment to her previous life. I believe she did die and that they reanimated her corpse, and that's the big secret technology that Lumen is keeping secret. So those were our predictions and kind of what we discussed so far between episode 1 and episode 2. Let's talk about episode 3. Like a fucking sledgehammer, Milchick just putting that big black helmet on a shelf.
And it's a pretty big black helmet, I will say that. But I think he's also realizing that Lumen's racist, right? Because he gets that picture from the board, from Natalie and the board, who also got the same kind of paintings. And it was a depiction of what I believe was supposed to be Keir, right? Keir Egan. But it was with blue eyes and black skin. It was a black face. Total black face.
She presented him that mysterious present to recognize, like, his commitment to the company. And can we just briefly talk about Natalie's character, right? She always has this, like, really nice, kind, bubbly personality. But that's,
and she's gorgeous. She's gorgeous, though.
So when she's saying that she's conversing with the board, it's, like, readily apparent, like, from an outside perspective, that she's not talking to anyone, right? And that's the reality when you're filming these things. But that comes across through the screen to convey the odd interaction between Milchick never actually speaking with the board, and it's always somebody communicating with the board through Natalie. She mentions that, you know, she had previously received the same gift, and it's just a bunch of paintings. Sorry, a bunch of depictions of Milchick in the image of Keir, or in the eyes of Keir, except for all the eyes were blue. It was odd. And the paintings kind of look like John Cheadle, if you ask Don Cheadle.
A little bit. But it makes you wonder, too. Natalie's eyes are blue. So maybe she was like Milchick unsevered before, and after she got the paintings, it was like the next step of the employment, maybe? I don't know.
You think so?
It's possible her eyes are blue. And they had that weird look down of, like, you would have to be a certain race, two black people, to give that look to each other of, like, what the fuck is this really going on right now? Like,
for me,
there's a lot of pain in that look.
It was the first instance of Milchick looking human, right? And not just a good old soldier. Almost like, these motherfuckers. No, they didn't, you know? It was just that weird, odd human aspect. And it makes me wonder, will Milchick turn coat and start working with the gang, with the crew?
See, that was my next theory. I'm thinking it's going to be him and Cobell that team up. Because Cobell even said to Helena when they met up in the parking lot, or not the parking lot, but the previous episode, episode two, that Milchek wasn't cut for the job. He's not the right man for the job. Maybe she means that he's too human for the job.
She also restated like that same kind of sentiment and confidence in towards the end of the episode with in her confrontation with Helena on the outside. But let's not jump too far ahead, okay? Milchek has been a good little soldier, even through season one, keeping track of things. He hasn't always been successful with the tasks, the task responsibility of keeping track of them and not letting them interfere. But however, like I think the first slight against him was sending him back out to everyone's house and kind of groveling at their feet to get them to come back to work with the little fruit basket, right? And he's never, ever a real human with regard to like his dialogue or communication. It's always a mask. He's always smiling. He's always calm.
Robotic.
Like, yeah, Mark. Yeah. Yeah, Bob. Why don't you just relax here? We can get you some. We got new rewards here. Did you look into that vending machine?
We got new cheese platters on the side.
We got the pencil erasers in the shape of sports balls now, you know. So I do agree with you. I think there's a chance that Milchek will be working with the gang in this season.
And that maybe not this season, but season three for sure. I think it's going to take a little more time for them to really unravel Cobell and Milchek.
So the fact that Mark's outie is starting to piece things together, it kind of changes the game with regard to the narrative of the show. And I've complained in the previous two episodes about the pacing and how the story hasn't been developed much or hasn't been moving forward enough. And I think that all changed with episode three. And that was one of my big requirements in our last review. It's like, I need the story to start moving forward. And we're finally getting there in episode three. Mark's doing anything he can. He's timing himself. He's like trying to burn UV light messages into his retinas to pass on messages to Mark. You know, he's ready to fully commit to this mission, which is nice, right? It's nice not to see him moping around and being lazy and just kind of apathetic. He's got a mission. He's got a reason to live now, and it's because
it's nice to see his relationship with his sister is slowly getting restored through it all. From this episode, you saw how they were interacting. They seemed like a normal brother-sister. They were cracking jokes when she went up the stairs, like, all right, fuck off. Thanks for paying for dinner.
Is it just me, or was Natalie and Mark's sister's husband interaction just a little too flirty? Like, it seemed like the sister was...
So do you want to touch on that right now?
Go on it.
So not only was it a little too flirty, but, I get the sense, you know, when the wife walked in, she knew that something was awry. But she also trusts her husband, right? So she knows that he thinks she's attractive, but he's not going to do anything. That being said, I think she went there, Natalie, to clearly underwrite what's in his book, not fix it. Like, and his sister was, you've said it best, what's wrong with it? Nothing's wrong with it. Why are you trying to change the writing inside for the innies? And that's clearly to control the innies a little bit more.
Oh, absolutely.
Because it's having the opposite effect right now. Sorry.
I also think the board's intentions have nothing really to do with the book. I think the board is just trying to infiltrate the family more to keep their thumb on to what's going on. And they're not going to get through the sister. She's too suspicious. She's too distrusting of Lumen as a corporation as it is, that she's too close. So what's best, go to her aloof, over ego, you know, through the sky husband, butter him up about wanting to use his book, and then you get in his good graces, and now you have some insight into what's going on
without having to kill her. But that still might be on the table. Dun, dun,
dun, dun, dun. Just might be. You know what was really, really hard about this episode is it was the most realist point, but also like the most emotional, and not in this overly emotional sense, but the part that I felt the most with my unfeeling self, when Dylan G referred to himself as a loser.
Yeah.
And as a fuck up.
Yeah. He's stupid. The way he said it, he's stupid. He does.
Almost like somebody with Asperger's, right? He's just no filter, just calling it how he sees it with his limited focus. That whole interaction was weird. And notice, like, the new child manager, let's recall what her name is.
Miss Huang, whatever.
Once everyone goes off on their little alternate missions, right? Dylan stays. He says, I'm going to work, because he already had that previous conversation with Milchick about the family visiting center. And sure shit, as soon as everyone disappears, he's like, nah, I'm just going to work on here a little bit more. He gets taken back there and gets to visit with his actual Audi wife. That whole dynamic, that whole sequence was awesome, in my opinion.
I don't know what's up with their marriage from that scene. And then when he flash forwards to the scene where he's on the, it's an Audi Dylan, and he's on his living room couch with the kids and she's leaving for work. She looks like a policewoman, maybe.
Yeah, like a cop or a security guard.
But it didn't seem like they had a strenuous marriage. It didn't seem like...
Oh, is that what you saw? I did. I saw quite the opposite. It looked like someone who was taking care of everything and trying to keep things balanced. He's coming back home from work. She's going to work, and she asked him about the cookies and then had to give him the instructions. And again, the only job he's been able to keep is this one at Lumen, where he's not actually the person that's doing the work. Yeah. I thought it just confirmed Dylan G's statements or his initial reading on what the relationship was like. So I think you saw something completely different than I did.
That's sad, if that's the case. That's really sad, because she seems like a good woman.
We'll see. Does she work for the police department? Does she work for security at Lumen? Is she going to play a bigger role in this season? Or is this just a little side thing to give us a peek into Dylan's life? I don't know. Maybe it has something to do with how they conceived. Maybe Lumen had a hand in that. I don't know. Maybe she'll end up befriending Mark, who looks like by the end of the episode is becoming sewn together, you know, his Audi and Innie.
Yeah.
And maybe her role in law enforcement or in security is going to play a pivotal role in how this story ends in season two. But
I find it interesting, and it could just be me, but Miss Huang and Milchick, although different races, different ages, I think they purposely selected her to favor Milchick. If you look at her face, she definitely favors him in the face. And then even like the way they act is very off-putting. I think they did that on purpose, subconscious. It's part of the severance.
I can agree with, right? Like, they're supposed to give that cold, unemotional response to everybody, so they have no idea what's going on. But I don't think there's any resemblance at all.
Oh, that could be his daughter. Easily.
He's a single dad. Only way he can keep a job is if he brings his kid to work.
I'm just loving that he's starting to see what this
why every black dad got to be a single father, Bob?
He could have been in the Air Force. A GI. But I'm loving how he's starting to see it for what it is. And the plot thickens. It's answering a lot of questions that we wanted from season one so far. And that's getting me rock hard. I'm very aroused by that. I'm not going to lie to you. I like it.
Let's see. What do you think about that last conversation between Miss Coble and Helena?
I think Helena
was trying to kill her.
Absolutely. She's about to offer. And I think Cobell's too smart for that shit. Like you said earlier, when Natalie's on the phone with the board, she's not really on the phone with the board. And all of a sudden, Helena's on the phone with Natalie, getting on the phone with the board, fucking midnight, trying to lead her into a building with a Russian. Please, miss me with that. Cobell's too smart. She's onto their game, and Helena's scared of her. And I think that's starting to be shown more and more throughout the series as well.
I'm really curious as to where Cobell was going before she decided to return to Lumen.
See, that gave me a whole WandaVision feel to it. Because, like, even in the end sequence when Mark's going through all the outfit changes, and I get it. But, like, she couldn't leave the city. Like, she's stuck in the bubble. So I really want to know what Lumen is. Like, do they own this entire city? Do they own this entire state? And the only way to get out is to literally drive out of it.
No. Mystery on mystery on mystery.
Stacks on stacks on stacks. Ben Stiller, damn it.
I really did. You know, you briefly mentioned that closing sequence with Mark on the table as he's being sewn together. I really enjoyed how they visualized that. Not just in with the flashes of him in the different clothes through different moments, but even on the electronic meters and showing the different lines and how they're struggling to come into sequence. I think they did a really good job. The sand on the table, obviously those are all like independent means of measurement. Like the sand on the table has to do with audio waves and how different waves can be represented in a physical pattern with those sand tables. Like, so like in real life, they have no meaning together, but just the choices they made to visualize unison, you know, I thought was really tasteful.
And what was that chick's name? Azal Ragabi? That was the second time we've seen her since season one.
Yeah, I can't remember what her name was.
Azal Ragabi. And she said she perfected the sequence now, so he won't end up like Petey. So he, spoiler alert, Marquez decided immediately to do it because that's his fucking wife. And that's where it left us. So hopefully episode four is even better than this one.
I think I'm locked in for the rest of the season now. Like we're getting to the meat and potatoes of what's going on. I think next episode will probably be a series of Eunice and Mark, figuring out, getting the lay of land, understanding what his Audi has already understood, and on the other side, his Audi personality coming to terms with what his actual life has been like and who he actually is as a person, and maybe those conflicting feelings. Now Mark on the outside is going to experience those conflicting feelings for Helena while he's still in love with Gemma and searching for her, right? So, and we saw that dynamic too in the hallway with Mark and Helena when, or in Heli, when they went to go look for the room to find Gemma, or the goat room
The
to find
goat
Gemma.
room.
And they're staring at each other, and almost like Mark wants to ask for a kiss again, but his know-how to, engage in intimacy. But I think those diverging feelings, Mark, Audi Mark for Gemma, any Mark for Helly, is going to create some kind of weird psychological conflict for
You
the
see,
rest
I
of
also felt like Helena was pushing for Mark to choose her over
Oh,
Gemma in that
absolutely.
situation as well. And that was dirty. Because it's like you just told him you'd help him, and now you're trying to see where he's at. Which one do you want more, kind of thing.
Because it's the Audi, man. It's the Audi. Why
Selfish
really help?
bitch.
Why
Selfish
really help me?
bitch.
What are the chances that, what is the process that they're doing that they did to Mark, that they did to the other guy in season one, where they bring them together? Because I don't want to keep saying like unison or whatever, or combining, whatever they're doing to them. What are the chances that happens to Helly throughout this story? And, because of that, Helly's influence on Helena, turning her against her own family and the corporation.
See, I slowly happening. Like, and I don't want to say the goat scene was one of those times because I feel like she put up a flyer of Gemma in that scene to save their asses from getting killed, more so than to find Gemma. But I think it's slowly happening. It started with the last episode when she's looking at the camera and seeing Mark and being envious, like we talked about, of their relationship. But you haven't seen enough of it yet. And so yeah, it's getting there. I'm interested still on the whole Irving thing. We got to touch on Irving because he didn't want to. I mean, speaking of Dylan again, he tried to get Dylan to go with him to the fucking, what is it, OND, whatever spot, and Dylan clearly wanted to go see his family, which I get. I would do that too.
Dylan didn't know he was going to go see his family, but his motivations were to be on his best behavior to maintain that
Because he knew
flight.
it was on the table, right?
Yeah.
So he didn't want to fuck it up. So I get it. But then Irving finally got the balls to go, and I can't remember if he showed that the lady a picture of Gemma or not. Did he?
He did. She didn't give much information, but then he showed her all the pictures of what's his name?
Oh yeah, the pictures of Bert.
Of Bert, that's
And
right. And at the end of
speaking of.
those pictures was the hall, the door with the red light at the end of the
And
hall.
that she's the and that was called the exports hall.
Yes.
And that they the Bert and his old partner used to be able to go there, but now they get a man to do it. But touching back on the whole the flyer of Gemma thing, when they go back to the goat room, what does that chick say about Gemma? That she treated them well, that
She had good insights.
good insights, and then the one other guy said that. She said that I loved space or stars or
Staring at
something like that.
stargazing.
Stargazing, yeah. So they knew of her, and then they let them go because they knew of her. And I think they suspect something weird's going on too, because what the fuck was with the pouch thing?
Let me see your belly.
Let me see your stomachs. What is that? Let me see your belly. Just as I suspected, no pouches. So they're not only severing people, but they're enhancing them with pouches, or they're mutilating them with pouches?
When I saw that, I knew that you would hyper focus in on that really odd interaction. I think that interaction means absolutely nothing. It's just fun and weird and odd, and it's sent there to like distract you from what's actually going on. You're going to ask all those questions about what the fuck did they mean by pouches. It'll be answered maybe later on in the season, but it won't have any impact on the story. There'll be like one dude who like pulls a burrito out of his belly pouch, you know, or something.
Or baby goat or some shit.
Yeah. Man, it was a little creepy when all those people popped up from behind those hills.
The black goat, especially. Like, what the fuck was that guy? He was on too much Adderall that day. Oh, yeah.
Well, I'm excited. I still don't quite understand this release schedule, right? It's supposed to release every Friday. And when I first looked it on, when I came home yesterday, it wasn't available. Then later on in that, I checked and it was available. I'm like, well, it's still not Friday. It says Friday, but it's Thursday and it's available. And I watched it on Thursday, like... What's going on with Apple and like this release schedule? Does someone know? Are they using like UK time to determine?
So I remember like when the first season came out, for some reason it came out at 6 o'clock the day before too. And even like other shows that come out on Apple Plus. So it might just be an Apple Plus TV thing that some people are aware of, some people aren't. And maybe they don't do it for every show. I don't know. But it does seem to be a thing for Severance. And I'm happy for it. Fuck it. Cuts the time.
Does your partner have any ideas or thoughts that we haven't discussed on episode 3? Any observations?
Miss Huang being dead, like Miss Casey.
Ooh.
She was a cross guard. She was a cross guard, she said, when we first got introduced. Because it's a little strange that they got a 13-year-old.
And no one's asking questions about where she is.
Only Dylan G. Like, are you okay?
Maybe Dylan G's wife, I can't remember what her name was, but maybe he'll ask her to look into it. And she's a cop. But she would have seen the kid. And if she was a cop, then she would have known the kid had been dead. So, now I'm second guessing that.
I don't think she works security at Lumen, because when she was in the room with Dylan, she said that they made me put all my stuff in here. She would have known the protocol already.
That's true. But I'm saying if she was a cop, then she would have likely been aware that a child died in a crossing guard accident, you know?
Yeah, so that would be the red flag as soon as he says something about it.
And maybe she, even though she talked to her, she never saw her, you know, so.
There might be, or she could have responded to the scene. Never knew.
Yeah. Well, that's about it for this episode. But we have a lot to look forward to, a lot to talk about. Hit us up in the comments if you have some theories or some thoughts we didn't touch on, or you have some criticisms of some of our dumb theories or our bad recollection, because I can't keep names straight from TV characters.
Yeah, it's the midlife hour, not the young life hour. Get it right. Yeah,
damn right. Bob, take us out.
Stay black. Thank you guys for listening, and I cannot wait for Severance Episode 4. Peace.
Deuces.